I think I'm just going to start right here. My name is Frank A. Schneider. I'm a writer and artist, and I'm part of the Monochrome group, the art group Monochrome. Most of you, I think, will know us. We are an art group, for those who don't, we are an art group that is based in Vienna and has some branches in Graz, Austria, and Bamberg, Germany. And Bamberg, Germany, that's just me. I'm the officially ugly German of the group, as we always say. And what are we doing? We do a lot of stuff as Monochrome. We, for example, publish a magazine. That's the latest one. It's pretty thin and not much to read. 2 kilograms of countercultural madness, that is. We are hosting a website, of course. We're publishing books. We publish CDs and stuff like that. And we're working on our first 2 movies right now. We hired a guy from China who's doing our paintings and stuff like that. We do performances. So you could say we work with media. Yeah, and we do not only work with media, we also are addicted to media, all of us. We are 9 people. We love media. We, of course, collect media. If you ever happen to drop by in Bamberg, give me a call and I show you my room stuffed with media. It's like thousands of single media mediums in there, like records and books and cassettes and CDs and some media that you won't even know that they exist too. So you could say, you could say that all of this might amount to media art, and that's exactly what we are doing. That's the word for it. That's a name that you would give the things that we are doing. So you probably will say, oh, okay, these guys, Monochrome from Vienna, that is, must believe in all that media bullshit that they're dealing with and that media activism is all about. Yeah, that's right. But, okay. So just take a seat and you're welcome. I think some people might have realized that they are in the wrong room. Nee. Ah, we have a really media problem here, so what are we supposed to do? Go somewhere else? Ja, na, kein Problem, mir wurde gesagt, ich bin hier. Nö, was denkt das Publikum? Bleiben wir da. But could somebody please get to the door and say, tell the people that are coming in what actually is happening here, and somebody could go over to the other room and say to the people that want to listen to me that I'm here. Okay, this is the media is a messiah. That's some really good problem.
What?
Yeah. That's great, because it clings to what Johannes told you yesterday on the principle of failure in computer businesses or in all social cultural businesses. So, okay, I come back to my script right here. If you... Is anybody now in the right room? You're not? Ah, great. Me too. All of these amounts to media art, and so you might say that these guys, Monochrome from Vienna, must believe in all that bullshit that media activism is all about. And I can say to you, I can answer, well, we are trying not to. We're trying really hard sometimes, and trying not to fall, be fooled by media activism that we are actually doing all the time. And now we are going to deconstruct that bullshit that media activism is all about. I'm going to deconstruct it with you and for you, And I'm trying to give you a somewhat Marxist analysis of the problem of media in bourgeois society. This all was already done in a text that I'm referring to now. The text was published in this magazine. It's called The Medium is the Messiah. And yeah, and I'm going to give you a short survey about what I'm going to do with you today. In the first step, we are going to learn about a guy called Marshall McLuhan. And he's a guy who said that really nervy sentence or phrase, the medium is a message. You all have heard that once, one or the other time in your life. And we will ask at that point, did he really revolutionize media theories through that? And the second step, we will try to understand why the medium has always been a message of salvation. Not just a message, but a message of salvation. Eine Heilsbotschaft, that is in German. And from that on, from that point, we're going to ask why media theories so often turn out to be media theology, Medientheologie. Also warum Medientheorie so oft Medientheologie wird. Then we need to see that the bourgeois subject defines itself through the use of media as the privileged little sucker that he is or she is. And after that, we'll have a few thoughts why media activism tends to be passivität. Sorry for my really nice German English that I'm practicing here with you. This will be followed by a short description of the circularity of media utopismus. We are going to call that the endless loop of euphoria and hangover. And suddenly, at this point, it will come to our mind that we still need media. Fuck. So we can share some sweet despair at that time of my lecture. And after that, we'll come up with the idea that if we need media, we'll need some pretty good media theories too. That's the idea that I'm going to bring through to you after all that introduction talk. And what that could be will make up at the end of our little lesson and have some pretty good discussion after that, I hope. Okay, there we go. First, some thoughts on Marshall McLuhan. Marshall McLuhan, if you don't know him, was a Canadian media theorist and, of course, a Catholic one. He lived from 1911 to 1980, and he published a lot of books, and one of his most important and influential and seminal books was Understanding Media, that was published in 1964. And there we find this phrase that we have heard so often, the medium is a message. And what does it mean? It means that it's up to what a medium is like, the message is up to what a medium is like. The medium is determining the message, and the characteristics that a medium has affects the way we conceive and perform reality. I don't know if you can say that to perform reality, but I think it sounds really good, so I say it. We perform reality through the use of media. And media trains us how to perform and conceive reality. And how do they do it? They do it by the way they engage the viewer or the receiver of the media message. And so the concrete form of media affects the content it delivers. That's basically the meaning of this sentence by Marshall McLuhan, the medium is a message. And so he puts the focus of his thinking on the form of the media and how it changes the world of which it tells us. And he says, this is even more important than the actual content, what media is trying to bring through. And Marshall McLuhan disesteemed the content, more or less. So people always say, the medium is a message, this phrase revolutionized media theories. And they say it deleted the traditional content dogma of media theories, in which a medium is only a means of transport for the content. So we have to ask, did he really revolutionize media theories through that? I would say for him, a medium is no longer a tool, but a promise, ein Versprechen, a promise. Promise, oh, sorry, a promise. So the promise of the media is that it is going to change everything, change the world. And he has three main states in which media development comes through, and in which the forum in each of these states, the forum of the main media is what defines the state. The first one would be the oral age, the age in which we all had face-to-face communication because we had no other means of communication. And he says that was an age in which we had multi-perspective communication, we had no author, we had an oral tradition there, and after that the book comes in, the age of the book begins, it's pretty shortened out, but and the book introduced monoperspective, the monoperspective of the author that's writing the book, that's talking to us, but we cannot talk back. So it's a non-dialogue structure, and the concept of authorship that is so important to all this copyright stuff was introduced then. And Marshall McLuhan called that the Gutenberg galaxies because he liked to have all these cool-sounding postmodernist terms. He was very good at coining them up. And he still lives kind of in the Gutenberg age, in the Gutenberg galaxies, but he awaits the next age that's already coming through, and that's the electronic age. And so some people say he's the prophet of the internet age, of the time that we have now, more or less. And that's his, he's an announcer of the revolution that's coming through. But I would say that revolution always has a theological aftertaste. It always smells like theology, like religion, and plus Marshall McLuhan was a Catholic, if you remember that about him, and so to him the media is not only the message, but a message of salvation, eine Heilsbotschaft, because the media, the electronic media, will come and redeem us all. They will change everything, they will make the world a better place, like in the Michael Jackson song. But at that point, of reading Understanding Media, I thought, but wasn't that always the thing about the media before? Didn't bourgeois media theories always believe in the media in that way? then I came up with the thought that bourgeois media theory actually always has been media theology by believing in the media, awaiting the media. By approaching the media in the same way as theology approaches the god or the goddess or the god principle that it's dealing with, and by bringing up credos like the medium is a message. It was the credo of the media theories, I would say, before Marshall McLuhan came up and said that. And Marshall McLuhan was simply the first one who was able to say it in such a nice and quotable and cool and postmodernist phrase. That he was really good at that. That was his main attractivity for media theories. So we have this the term media theology here. So what does it mean? I would say that bourgeois media analysis is always only analyzing the form that a media has, that the medium has, the form of the medium, and never ever the content. The content to bourgeois media theories is always no problem, and the only problem is to bring the content through or on is to make up the right form for the media, for the medium, and if the form is right of the medium, the content will be right too. That's the basic assumption of most of the bourgeois media theories that are out there. And so to put it in a nice quotable phrase, you could say, if the table is round, then the results of our negotiations will be round too. Kind of a commandment to bourgeois media theories, also ein Gebot im Sinne der zehn Gebote, is you need to get informed, always get informed. So, and not only get informed, the second commandment could be get informed in the right way, in the correct way. Correct
inform yourself correctly. Because if we know the truth, we'll know how to do the right things and what the right things are and what to do and some stuff like that. And when the information that we have changes, then actually the world changes too. Nice assumption that is, but I think that's wrong. But what bourgeois media theories made out of that assumption is that they said you have to fix and adjust the form of the media. Media might lead us into paradise or it might lead us into hell, so try to find the right form that brings us into paradise. Media hell could be something like kids running amok after they're playing ego shooter games, and the hell could be the paradise that Web 2.0 seemed to introduce some years ago and didn't in the end, but we believed in that for a time. We thought, oh, Media 2.0 will introduce democracy that we are still waiting for. So media theories has always been talking about what the right form is and how to get it. And I give you two examples about that. One is, maybe you know Jürgen Habermas, the guy with the cleft lip, the official German state philosopher, you could say. And he always said, you have to adjust the form of the media to make society a good place to live in. And one of his opponents, he had a lot of opponents, he was good at having opponents. One of his opponents was Niklas Luhmann, that system theories guy, maybe. Another German, of course. And he said, no, Habermas, you're not right. You have to trust the media that it will find the right form itself in the process of media evolution. So you could say Luhmann is more or less a neoliberal guy, and Habermas is a classical German social democratic guy that's dying out right now. But Habermas, is, I think, had his 70 birthday and will die out soon, but he's still around and is social democratizing around and stuff like that. And I would say to both of them, well, that's just ideology. You're talking just ideology. Because talking about the form always obscures one content, one specific content. And that content would be the question, how the fuck did media materialize? What are the conditions for media to materialize? And I would say it's bourgeois society, aka capitalism. What that fucking feedback thing here. The economy, capitalist economy that is what determines society. That's my axiom. I'm a Marxist, of course. And it determines through that everything that's in bourgeois society, like us. And it of course, determines media and us as media activists, of course. And that does not only go for what some people call commercial media. I think the word commercial media itself is bullshit, because there is no such thing as a commercial media as opposed to a non-commercial media. Every medium is commercial, since every medium is a commodity in one or the other way. Even free giveaway things are commodities too. We could talk about that in afterwards. But like bourgeois art, bourgeois media wants us to believe that they are not commodities, and that's a lie. Because people who edit or print or fill newspapers do that as a job, or they do that as a hobby and have another job to earn a living. But they are on a market, and they are not the profits through which the media god speaks to us, as they conceive themselves. They are just workers, and they need to conceive themselves as workers, and we need to conceive ourselves as workers. Fucking English language. Who are the believers in this scenario? Why do so much people believe in that? We at Monochrome believe that believing is a constructive act. You are what you believe. And thus we have to figure out what exactly these people are believing, to find out who these people are that believe in the media. So we again take on Jürgen Habermas. He's one of my favorite foes that I have, because he believes in something that he calls the domination-free discourse, den herrschaftsfreien Diskurs. The domination-free discourse is something that from which nobody is excluded or should be excluded. Every position should be represented, should be able to be represented. And after that, after it is represented, it should be discussed in the light of ratio and reason. So reason is the only message that's constituting the market of positions that is the domination-free discourse, or wants that the domination-free discourse wants to be. Yeah. And you have to convince the people that you're talking to through your arguments, through that what you're saying, not through violence or stuff like that. And he believes that that would be an utopia, and utopian society would come through if we could achieve a domination-free discourse. So to him, domination and exclusion are simply a problem of the organization of communication. And Marx, who's a good friend of mine, an imaginary friend that is, of course, he called that German ideology, Deutsche Ideologie. Because in this scenario, the being to be is only a subcase of consciousness. But that, I would say, is only true for those who don't have any problems to be. And that is to make a living, actually, like Jürgen Habermas, who's a bourgeois intellectual, and has, and being a bourgeois intellectual or liberal means your fridge is always full of stuff that you can eat, and then you can think and work on your consciousness and on the domination-free discourse stuff. So being liberal means also being not aware of your privileges. I can't read that anymore. You can, okay, I'll leave that out. And that is the privileges a class society supplies you with. But then you can ask yourself, how can they still believe when they see that the world is a piece of shit, the world that they are living in, it's a total piece of shit. And then they can use, then they normally use what you could call an old theological trick here. And it's called, okay, I worked with my Leo spelling program, I'm trying to spell it correctly, theodicy. Theodicy, theodicy. Is it right? Theodicy? What is theodicy? Theodicy means, according to Wikipedia, to reconcile the belief in God which is with the perceived existence of evil. I say that again. Theodicy is to reconcile the belief in God with the perceived existence of evil in the world. So, and what evil we are talking about here? The evil we are talking about here is economy, the bourgeois economy, capitalist economy. So, because this is the evil to a bourgeois liberal like Jürgen Habermas, with a left-wing liberal, leftist liberal, not a right liberal, he has to separate media from economy, to still believe in the media without believing in the economy. So you have to introduce two positions. One position would be the bad market that is always threatening the other position, which is the good media. And I would say, you know that game, of course, all the discussions about that stuff. And I would say that this is just the old good cop, bad cop game that they are playing between the media and the market. The market is, of course, the bad cop position, and the media is a good cop position. Since both are representations of the same thing, that is capitalist economy. Like all of us are representations of capitalist economy. But if media gets commercial, in that perspective, it's becoming bad media. And that's basically what media criticism in Germany, where I live, is all about. It's always about media badness, about bad media, about media that have that fell to economy, like the yellow press or the private television, which, of course, represent the worst of both worlds, the worst of economy and the worst of media. And that's all they criticize about media. They never criticize their own media stuff and their own media assumptions, of course. They couldn't do that because they would ruin their own identification with it. So, and there's another reason for that. Because to be a true believer in media, you need bad media. Because bad media assure you that you're of your own media competence. I was told that it's in English it would be media literacy, but in Germany it's Medienkompetenz, which is a total German word. And the English translation, somebody told me, is media literacy. Okay, media literacy. You are assured of your media literacy through bad media, through yellow press and through private television, which you don't consume, of course. You consume what we in Germany call Qualitätsjournalismus, quality media. Another typical German word, Qualitätsjournalismus. Yeah, and I would call that media class wars. Because the wrong media is, of course, the media for the lower classes. And the lower classes in the bourgeois perspective are those that do not care for truth or enlightenment or stuff like that. They just want entertainment, and they get it through bad media, through yellow press media and stuff like that. And so they surf in the same way as the pagans did to the traditional religious systems. First, they are the object of the fantasies of conversation, to converse them to how to use the right media. And second, of course, they give you the feeling to belong to the chosen ones, because you are not among them, you are among the media ruling elite who's reading Die Zeit or Süddeutsche or stuff like that, or the New York Times or stuff like that. So the next point in my talk is why media activism is passivity so often. I would say that the whole media thing is a kind of a religious thing, and being religious is always about being right and being good. And a good liberal, for a good liberal, being right and being good means to have the correct attitude towards everything. You need the correct attitude towards violence in marriage and all that stuff. You have always towards the immigration problem, of course. You always have a set of correct good attitudes to be a good liberal. And that's their main concern, I would say. That's all they want, all they need. And to distinguish what's the right attitude, what could it be, they need to get informed. So here we are back on the information track. And that's why they have this, you could say, information fetish all the time. That's why they need all these newspapers they subscribe to, and why they are so, so keen about them, why they're love their newspapers and always talk about their newspapers and stuff. I know a lot of people like that in the place where I live, and it's an analysis of their behavior that they show to me. So what does this mean? This means that information sometimes substitutes for action here, because they of course consider themselves as being political, but participating in the political world is only for them through media. That's the only way they participate in the political world. So this type, you could say, is so devoted to becoming informed, so no capacity is left for anything else like taking action or stuff like that. And reading the evening paper, which is a cliche, of course, is the ritual of them, and it's so self-sufficient. So media is a surrogate for political action here, you could say, and the free and comprehensively formed opinion that you get taught in school or in the newspaper that you should have is, you could say, a placebo. I would say that. And the more information you get, the less you get involved, because the more information you get, the more you learn that the world is a complex place, that everything is so complex, so fucking complex, and it's so complex that you can't do anything about it, because you always know better. If you try to do something, you always know better. It won't work and all that stuff. And the only thing that is left to you is to be aware about that complexity And that is basically the reason why every new medium by them will be acclaimed, because it's their way of being political is consuming media. And we are too in that discourse, of course. We still await for the media, for the medium that will finally redeem us from, you could say, capitalist doom, of course. And so we are waiting each new media that is being announced as a kind of a savior that was promised to arrive someday in some religion. And because of that, we all talk that shit about the grassroots potential of Web 2.0 and said stuff like, I have a quote from a guy called Robert John here. He said, the internet gives people their voices back that the mass media took from them. Yeah, and he didn't say that in 1926 or in 1987. He really said stuff like that in 2005. And that really baffles me. Because he said so because he still holds that one hope that someday there will be the right medium to throw out all the false merchants from the media temple, from the bourgeois temple of the media that we are in right now, of course, the Church of Information, where you have all these stupid German television broadcasting companies stuffed in one place. So, when I heard all that talk about Web 2.0 some years ago, it totally reminded me of the time when the internet was introduced, and some of the people in left-wing media, of course, started to talk like that. Oh, the internet is a rhizome, ein Rhizom. Oh, the rhizome is coming on. Oh, it's great. And that was like 5 minutes. Then they started what you could call a major recall action and said, oh no, the internet is proved to be not a rhizome, but just the old commercial bourgeois bullshit. And now we fall back to the damnation, and our hopes imploded and our hopes gone away, and we are so sad now, and we're gonna find a job in the marketing branch or something like that, because we are so cynical now, because that rhizome thing didn't work with the internet. Oh shit. Yeah. And that's a problem, because always you have that belief in a new media and you are disappointed or you're disillusioned through the reality it produces, the media reality it brings on. You not only lose the hope in that one media, but you lose the hope in change at all. The hope, the possibility of change is diminishing, so all our hopes in media failing all the time. And that's a problem. But it's not really the problem, it's just the business as usual of intoxication. Because euphoria is always delimited by the impending hangover. We know that if we ever did ecstasy or stuff like that, we know that. Oh, we are so high, and next day we are so, oh, God. And that's the same thing with media. You could call that the endless loop of euphoria and hangover. It's kind of a Möbius strip, a Möbius band. But through that, the activists' focus has shifted from what could be considered the problem they deal with to the acquirement and the adequate use of media. And the media is actually the message of all those shiny, happy media activists out there. I know a lot of them, I'm one of them too, and I know that the medium is their message, it's my message too sometimes. And that's why all these media activists tumble from one disillusion to the next all the time. And they say, and after that, they say always stuff like, oh, again and again, the mechanisms of the market conquer the democratic potential of technology. And they say that all the time. In this case, it was Robert McChesney and John Nichols who said so in 2004, after they saw that the Web 2.0 thing went down so bad and all that stuff. So you could say you always look stupid when the new media hype has been turned in and you look like Robert McChesney and John Nichols in 2004, that is. Yeah, but what could we do instead of repeating that endlessly? We should try to understand what's wrong here. We should try that there to understand that there is of course no right media in the wrong. Yeah, I repeat that there's no right media in the wrong. Please keep that in mind if you go on and with all the media business that you're doing. I try to do so when I collect my records and write my books and all that stuff. There is no right media in the wrong. Media and how we use it has always been caught up in social conditions, and the utopian range and impact that they have is limited by the logic form and lifespan of commodities that they are. And because the market produces media only to throw media away again the next moment when the new media is coming on. And always keep that in mind. Media revolts that we are all waiting for, media revolts are always product introduction phases. That's the whole thing. And there is no free economy of the net. That's something that we are always talking about. There's only free economy of the net if you can afford the startup kit. That's the point. And even low thresholds still remain thresholds. That's the point for me here. Because the worldwide network of the free subject is still closed for a lot of people right now, and not only in Iran or states like that, but in Africa and real big spaces on the world, there is no free economy of the net, and there is no net at all. But media activists, and that is a problem, don't recognize that sometimes because they're so concerned with their own problems of how to use their media. But the problem is that we still need media. We still do need media. Even those who don't believe the hype need media to communicate that they don't believe the hype. That's a problem. You might already know at that point that the bourgeois society or capitalism, that is a vicious circle. And we don't have the time for the sighing part here, as I promoted when I did my survey. We just skipped that because I want to have some discussion after that. And let me see what the time is. Media is not working. Okay, it's good. So, but we don't have the time for the sighing part in general. So let's come to the synthesis quick. Die Synthese, synthesis. Leo learned me that. Okay, because all of that is neither a reason for hope nor for resignation. It's a reason for practice, I would say. But practice always needs theory, because without practice, without theories, practice just means being stupid, I would say, like liberals do, because they don't have theories. They only have their values and attitudes. So what we would need through a theories of media use under capitalist society circumstances would be to understand that most problems of media action originate from the social order that produce these media. And if we could get that understanding, that's my suggestion, we could be saved from exaggerated media euphoria as well as from exaggerated disappointments about the real change that media can bring on, which is the consequence of the former, of course. And the first step that we need to make would be to cut out the old debate about the right form of the media. Throw that away, leave that to Jürgen Habermas, and he's dying soon anyway. Let's do something else instead of, because where there never has been content, but only content managers like Jürgen Habermas or Niklas Luhmann, first of all, we need content. We must define what content should be transported, and we have to make out or figure out what that could be. To me, I would say content not in the old sense of getting information through to people, or just getting information through to people, but content should be a theories of what media really are, to understand them, and not just follow the torrential stream or the downpour of every new medium that's coming on and stuff like that, but to analyze our own social framework conditions in which we use media. And from that point, we might come to understand the real potential of a medium, which could be a starting point for a politicization of the net. Sure, that is not an utopia, of course, We are not awaiting the new media messiah here, who will always turn out to be the false one in the end. But that's good, because as a utopian scenario, media is only useful to those who regard their failure as an affirmation of their normality, of their state of how the things go. And we might look slightly less silly when the next media hype is over. Thank you very much, and now discuss it.
So.
But you first need the microphone.
Thank you very much. For me, it's like the opposite position of that what my talk was about. So this is quite interesting. But I think I'm not convinced, because I see progress. Nevertheless, the revolution is not there, and the capitalism is not down, and we see a lot of commercial in the internet, yes, but we also see progress in participation. We see a lot of progress in participation, and just because the big revolution is not there, and not the capitalism is still there, this is not the problem. I think that the media is a problem, and your media to look at these progresses is Marxism. And I think your disappointment is not about the media you look at, but it's about the media you look with, the Marxism.
Well, that's a good point, maybe. I would say, first, I'm not disappointed with media, but I'm... well, I feel, how you say, bestätigt, confirmed through how things go. As a Marxist, you always feel confirmed by everything that's going on. That's the trick of Marxism, of this medium. Yeah, but I think, okay, there is participation coming on, but that's my point, because participation, that would be the Habermas side of it. Participation does not change the economic set in which it takes place, and participation could be taken away from you, like we have now financial crisis going on, and that will suck up a lot of participation that we brought on so hard right now. We have in Germany, we have stuff like Hartz IV, yeah, that's fucking up a lot of participation that was brought on in the 70s. Yeah, people are just totally excluded from society because they are no longer needed for the market of people. And I would say that it's not about participation, but it's about, I'm not disappointed, I just want to understand how this media thing works. That's does it answer your question? No, it was not a question. It was a yeah, okay.
It's just a point about the first question, but I think a problem with media activists, media theorists, etc., is that participation is so much an assumption. As we assume we've got this world, this internet world in which people participate. I say that might be true for Germany, but if you go to South Africa and you trawl through, well, if you go to South Africa on the internet, you trawl through forums, you trawl through comments, you will think that the South African citizen, if you're assuming participation, is a white, game-playing person my age who complains about the majority, is scared of black people, and is intensely racist. So I think to assume participation in new media, maybe it works in certain countries, but in certain countries it definitely doesn't. You're also assuming access, which is just stupid.
Of course, and I think that the countries that you're referring to, like South Africa, have the problem that they don't have like a wealth for all people, that so that they could join the form of participation that the net offers for them, and that's a problem because they don't even have like a bourgeois economy like we have in Germany that enables most of us to be in the net and have a notebook or stuff like that, or go to the internet cafe or whatever.
In my talk 2 days ago about guerrilla communication, I was talking about that one of the main problems, and I think that's what you're referring to, because that media always like, their media are just there because there is a capitalistic need for them, because it's a product and you market it, and something like Twitter works on a completely different way than, let's say, the New York Times, but still both things are a product and they're being sold. The main problem, I guess, is that as long as, I said in my talk, as long as you can't download your iPhone, as long as you don't have direct control over... You need money to actually get your hands on media. You have to buy media, you have to buy your iPhone, you have to buy your newspaper, whatever. And there are people who are producing that. And as long as we don't have like a real open way to deal with the production side of media, then there is always like this like catch-22 situation. Because of course we can find information about whatever we want, like on Google, and we have the whole world in there and we can look for it, but the very moment that Google decides as a profit-oriented entity to change the game, we can't do anything against it. If some corporation just decides to not support a certain country any longer with a deep sea cable, there is no freedom of information any longer, because the freedom of information is based on products, and that's why it can't be free anyways. I mean, I hope I get that right.
That's basically what I was talking about, or a part of it, I didn't want to just say that there shouldn't be some media activism. My point is that if you're into media activism and try to change something through media, not just doing marketing stuff, you should always keep in mind what range your actions could have, what you could reach through them, and under which circumstances you do that. Because I know a lot of people who did activist stuff, maybe in the field of media or maybe in the political more field, like demonstrating and stuff like that, and they all got cynical because they saw that nothing works and they can't do anything, and they privatized, a lot of them privatized, formed families and their little home, sweet home stuff, and or they're doing marketing now. Well, don't care. It's all the same. And that's a problem, because if they would have considered their actions in a frame that explains to them why it doesn't work, maybe they didn't need to get that cynical in the end, get out cynical as cynical people. Maybe I'm like a romantic, of course. I'm a Marxist.
Talking about romantic, when you say there's no right media and the wrong, you're talking about the old question, there is no going beyond within the system.
Yeah.
Or you're talking about the allgemeine Verblendungszusammenhang. So what would be beyond the system? So just one positive view. What are you believing in? Yeah,
I want money. what do I want? Actually, I can't tell. The only thing that I want is not looking stupid in the end. I mean, I have to talk in English, and I look very stupid through that. But I don't know. I have no utopia. I think I'm very pessimistic about how things are going out. What makes me an activist? What makes me an activist, as far as I could be concerned as one or considered as one, is that I don't like it, how it's like. I can't tell you how it should be, but I can definitely tell you that this is wrong, what's going on. Because so many people are suffering, so many people are suppressed, so many people are excluded, everything is we live in total bullshit, and I don't know how to change it, but I like to talk about that we need to change it.
So you're essentially a media activist criticizing media activism, and I was asking myself, if you're such good Marxists, why do you keep working on Überbau and not try changing the means of production?
What was the last part?
Why not try changing the means of production, the basis?
Yeah, that's a good point. First, I have to say I'm not a really good Marxist. I just say so because it sounds cool. But yeah, that's a good point of view. But I can think of a way to change the means of production within that set we're living now. I mean, of course, my reality as a media activist or as a cultural worker is always working on improving or changing or varying the means of production I have. Like the means of production that I have normally is language, if I work with German language, and I'm working on that. But I don't think that you can get very much through if you work on that. That's a problem. I mean, maybe we just somebody should come and free me. It would be a good idea.
Well, my main problem with the speech is that media is interpreted as a capitalist product, which it isn't. It exists far before that, and I think it's a capitalist success that we get to discuss about that as if it's a capitalism's.
Yeah, okay, but water existed before capitalism existed, but now it's capitalized. So capitalism takes everything that there is, takes the air we have, takes the nature we are living in, takes people. Of course, capitalism did not invent media because media is very much older than the capitalist society is, but it is under capitalist control, of course, like everything. Because it could be owned and it could be sold and all that stuff.
Yeah, but it was always owned and sold before.
Yeah,
that.
Well, it wasn't sold before there was money, I think, but it was changed or something or swapped or stuff like that. But yeah, okay, that's a good point.
I'd just like your opinion. You talked about bourgeois media. If you could point me to something that you see as a successful proletarian media. Now, there's two aspects. I don't know what that is, but the phone book.
It's right. It's a complete like, loss of money.
Okay.
No, there's two aspects. The one is the bad media you talk about when it's proletarian media in terms of consumption. It's not read by bourgeois, informed, educated, opinionated people like us, but it's read by the masses. And then the other one, which I hope to find, I don't believe it exists, is a media that actually has proletarian participation. So if you could point maybe me in that direction to that type of media, be very helpful.
I don't know. The media that I know, I don't know each medium that there is, but the media that I know try to do so, like Independent Records did. They're not proletarian because proletarian people most of the time do not make records. That's a bourgeois hobby in capitalist society, doing records or doing books like that. But I don't know. I think that even a proletarian medium in a bourgeois society, which does not only include the ruling elite, but bourgeois society includes, of course, all classes and determines them. And I think you cannot make up a proletarian medium within that set.
Would you agree that perhaps a proletarian participation medium could be Deutschland sucht den Superstar?
No, that's a bourgeois cliché. Because that's just the thing about the private medium, private television stuff and yellow press stuff. No, that's not a medium of proletarians coming in or stuff like that, because it's not controlled by them. It's controlled by Dieter Bohlen, who is not a proletarian or stuff like people like him.
He is from his attitude.
Well, he played in a German communist polit rock band in the 70s, of course, with messages like "fight the capitalists" and stuff like that. But right now, I forgot how the band was called. It was not an important band. Not even I have their record, but it's pretty stupid, I think. But right now he's not a proletarian. I mean.
So I have another example. What about places in the internet where people who are unemployed and live on Hartz IV exchange ideas and ways to deal with bureaucracy and everything?
That could be such a place. I don't say that such a place is not existing at all, but I say that all these places that you could make up as proletarian mediums are always like, if the market deters, if the economical situation deters like we have now, they are maybe threatened through that. They need to be really strong to survive that, I think. Don't you think so? I mean, you could make really free spaces. You could make up free spaces. Yeah.
I don't think so, because the means of production of creating such a place on the internet are very cheap.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, you're right, maybe. Okay. Laptops not cheap. And maybe in 20 years, people who have no job are not allowed to leave their houses, maybe. Yeah. That's the way I see it, or leave their quarter where they live.
But that would mean that it's for us, it would be more important to go out and claim that there must be free internet access in libraries, for example, then
yeah, of course,
do media activism and criticize media activism and repeat this no way out Marxist theory all over again.
No, you don't even have to repeat that message, but you have to keep in mind that none of it will really bring up a really society that would be worth living in. But we still need these things. We still need free internet access at libraries. We still need a media to spread out messages. All of that is totally cool with me. I just want that we don't lose our hope by investing it in such forms and then see them, oh shit, didn't work. The library is closing down because, well, the government has no money to keep it up, or the community has no money to keep the library up, so the free internet access is gone. Oh, we failed. Oh, that's a problem. We need all these media. We should build media. We should fight for them. We should not allow people to take it away from us. That's totally important, but it's just a tool. It's not the paradise if we have such media. It's just a tool to change things. It's not that things are already have changed if we have free internet access for people on the dole. That's my point. Yeah. Thank you very much.